I'm sorry if I caused this kind of problem. I thought maybe that, but I thought we were in luck because of what I heard Bruno speaking about. If these didn't get up here, I'd just continue on. He was talking about one of my favorite subjects. I heard him, before I was sleeping back there, heard him saying something about chlorophyll. And that's going to be a part of my presentation. But what I'm going to speak on today is a specific precision placement protocol for maximum productivity. Now, our objective is maximum productivity, but and precision placement is required to deliver the goods. But when discussing maximum productivity, I think it's appropriate for us to start with the largest contributor to yield, and that, I believe, is in the chlorophyll molecule, which is the chloroplast and photosynthesis. So we'll see, we'll proceed from that. And none other than Bob Loomis says that certainly a large portion of yield comes from photosynthetic-derived compounds. And my data certainly seems to support that. And one of the things I'm going to... One of the things I'm going to talk about then that leads me into, if we're talking about photosynthesis, I'm going to speak on the operational details of the solar quarter crop production system. Now, what is a solar quarter crop system? That's what we will soon see, and that's why you'll see I'm at a precision agriculture conference to try to get some help from precision agriculture. As I said, precision agriculture had to deliver this. But here is what the solar corridor is. It's a solar corridor of light, rows placed far enough apart so that we can have incident sunlight shining on every chloroplast in the chlorophyll molecules, which most of which are housed in the leaves, up and down that corn plant. Now, I don't like to see sunlight hitting the ground, of course, and I don't like to waste any of that row that's now missing in the cornfield. So we have in this particular cropping system, we would have where you can raise winter wheat and corn, and you have some erosion problems. This is a very good rotation to use. But so I've got a 30-inch swath. You see a 30-inch swath of wheat or any winter grain or winter oilseed crop. And I don't know if we forgot it or we just thought it wasn't necessary in a cross-sectional view, but we left out the stubble clover crop and subsequent cover crop that is growing in the wheat that should be growing in the wheat rows. One thing we have learned is that, of course, most hybrids don't like this system. I mean, there's no question, most hybrids don't use the system. So I'll get into how we get around that, how we solve that problem. And then here's another reason. If you look at the aerial view of the twin row planting pattern, is another reason why I'm glad to present this to Precision Agriculture Group, is this is kind of difficult to do from a mechanical standpoint. But I'm an agronomist. What I want to do is get the production out there, and I want to harness all of the atmospheric resources we can, that sunlight, carbon dioxide, and water source there, and so that's what I'm working on. And so this, in summary, it is indeed a paradigm shift, and a lot of people, especially large farmers, don't get very excited about this kind of system. But when you see the yield data, I think you see why they could. But what I have is staggered twin rows spaced far enough apart to enable sunlight to reach the lower leaves for the entire growing season. Now, most hybrids, it looks to me like the lower leaves really don't produce much. 10% of them do. And then enables us to capture more CO2 for the biosynthesis into photosynthate-derived carbon compounds. And then we grow a shorter symbiotic crop on the vacated row that completes its peak demand for sunlight before the corn takes all of the instant sunlight. Now, I will say, now this is a cross section taken just before wheat harvest. Now, so from here on out, the corn leaves will have all the sunlight they need, but there'll be very little to get through to the seedling, the stubble crop, after the wheat is harvested. But it will catch any sunlight that does filter through. We'll get down to that legume on the floor, which is of very little use during the growing season except to capture the sunlight that does fall to prevent some weed growth and to prevent the water from hitting the ground for soil compaction and have soil cover. But anyway, and then at corn harvest time, right after corn harvest, the center row of the wheat row is placed in between the 7.5 the twin corn row. And then the corn is no longer capturing photosynthetic energy, but from that time on, the stubble crop can have access to full resources of solar radiation and carbon atmospheric CO2, and then the wheat will just be starting to come up, emerge then, and we have pretty good winter cover. And then in the spring, where is there a pointer here anymore? Oh, okay. I'm not sure I can drive a mouse, but we'll see if I can drive a mouse. Okay. But in the spring, we try to plant the corn then, right here, in between those wheat rows where the wheat row was. And then we just rotate that from year in and year out, and always have pretty good ground cover to try to prevent soil erosion. And there's a lot of things can be done with this if we can believe the yield data that we're going to show later here. And I hope we're not all having to harvest our wheat in between the corn rows of this machine, but it can be done. But I'm hoping that in it presented to this group, we will have some other ways of harvesting this wheat. And if we don't, if cover crops are good anyway. But now I'm going to tell you what I'm going to give the results of the corn in 60-inch wide corn rows, the yield results. We had 12 production environments from a pretty heavy silty clay loam, Martin clay loam soil, on up to a Ridgeville, not a Ridgeville, a Guilford fine sandy loam. We used the best management practices that the host operator used for the controls. And we had four hybrids that we used. We split the treatment by one of the splits was hybrids. And those four hybrids came from 200 high-yielding corn hybrids we'd been screening for the previous 2 years before this. And hybrid A came from the 179 hybrids of those 200 that did not meet our threshold that we thought of hybrids that would produce in the solar quarter system. Threshold we're looking at is how long can the mature chloroplast continue to produce photosynthates, and the other is how aggressive is reproductive sink to access those photosynthates. Then we had four plant population because we cannot assume we know what the optimal population would be in an environment like this. So we had four populations that were consistent with the preliminary screening trials where we selected the hybrids and the population that we thought would be an optimum population and two populations in between. We randomized block split plot design as fairly standard except we put border rows all the way around each block of either 8 rows or 30 feet on the end rows. Because our controls means our treatment is extra incident sunlight. Anytime you have an alley between the blocks, you get extra light. You get light contamination on the control. So all of our controls in this system were adequately protected from extra sunlight. They just had the normal light they'd have in a high population, the regular 30-inch field. Okay, but now our two-row entries were if the farmer had 30-inch rows, we had 60-inch twin rows. If he had 36-inch equipment, we had 72-inch twin rows. So they could harvest with his equipment. And our observations previously had determined, we thought that we could grow another crop in between the corn rows without affecting corn yield if the crop would be finished by, say, the middle of June. We thought we could do that, but we weren't positive because we hadn't had any statistically analyzed data to prove that. And we still don't have the data. I'd like to have on that the data I'm going to show is on corn yield. But what we did is we had one site, had a parallel site where we had one block with nothing on the solar corridor floor, just corn, and another block with another crop growing in between the corn rows. And we harvested the yield of the two parallel blocks, and there was no difference in corn yield, And so therefore, we just threw that in. So we'll have in our results, we'll show one site will have had another crop growing in between and the other didn't, but there's no difference in yield, so I think that's all right. Then all treatments were north-south rows between 40 and 41 degrees latitude in the eastern Corn Belt. Now, here's the response of the hybrids to the row spacing over 12 environments. The thing that I come away with there is hybrid A did not like the solar corridor, which you'd understand that. I mean, most everyone I know, if they miss a corn row in the field, they quickly go out and try to plant it back in. And that hybrid A would want you to do that. But hybrid B, C, and D were truly unique hybrids. They jumped out in our screening trials that they looked like they would respond to extra sunlight, and it looks like they do. But I'm not one to assume that we'll get the same, that these results would interpret to any other yield level than this. So what I'd like to do next is I'd like to see what happens when we pull out the eight highest yielding environments, eight of those 12 environments, the highest yielding environments, see what we got. Okay, got the same results. Hybrid A didn't like the solar corridor. B, C, and D did. The only thing is we were at a higher yield level there, but it's got the same. So it looks like the yield response might well have some stability throughout the yield range. Now, but one of the things that's pretty obvious to us is, and looking at the data, was that, well, we did have three plant populations as a part of this. There were suboptimal plant populations. So what would happen, what would these responses look like if we took out the three lowest yielding plant populations? And that is kind of a struggle to do that because one of these hybrids had entirely different population requirements than the others did. And here's what happened. You got the same results. Hybrid A didn't like the solar corridor. B, C, and D did. Only thing is we are at a significantly higher yield level than we were in the first set of slides, but the results show the same. It looks like that there is some stability over time if we have the hybrids now, the right hybrids selected. Now, one of the big flaws is on the hybrid selection is these were all very popular high yielding commercial hybrids that we used. And I think the genotypes of these four were different. I know phenotypically A, B, C, and D were different cats. So I'm pretty sure we do have four truly different hybrids here. And I think I'm pretty sure these results are the kind of results we would expect from those. And But a lot of people ask me. The first farmers that saw this said, well, the one that produced one of these 12 operations. He said, how can that be that we can produce as much corn on one 60-inch wide twin row as we produce in the way I've been taught to plant corn? He said, I was thinking about going to 20-inch rows next year. You know, and this seems kind of contrary. He said, Dykeman, are you crazy? And I said, well, I that's to be determined yet, but I don't think so. Let's just look at the data and let's work on this and see. And he said, well, I hope you don't mind if I go to the back of the farm to do this, right? And I said, well, yeah, that's fine. I understand that. But it is kind of contrary to what we think. But the fact is, hybrids differ. And those chlorophyll molecules do hold chloroplasts. And photosynthesis does not begin until you have the energy catalyst of sunlight. I don't know if I covered that, had that slide in there or not. Oh, yeah. Oh, here it is. Okay. There's no question. Sunlight is a catalyst for photosynthesis to begin. So if, in fact, we are shading the bottom half or two-thirds of the chloroplast, it's not surprising to me that we could, in fact, get the same amount of corn produced or more in hybrid B, C, and D on a 60-inch wide Twin Cornrow than we do in controls, in 30-inch controls. But anyway, this is one of the best ways I know to, in fact, maximize yield per unit area, and then we have a problem in precision agriculture. How are we going to do this? But I did take this to the management systems component of our university, had them run a capstone project on this, and they said, well, if you can get the farmers that would do this, we can produce the machinery to harvest those rows of wheat in between the corn rows. And I know they can, because the first crop that put in between the corn rows was soybeans. And I told the farmers, I said, you know, I don't think soybeans is really the best crop to put in between the corn rows, because it competes the same time as corn for sunlight. And I said, well, besides, how are you going to harvest the soybeans? I see how you can harvest wheat over corn, but how are you going to harvest the soybeans? They said, well, you're the agronomist. You don't have to worry about that. You just produce a yield. We'll figure that out. And they designed a machine to harvest the wheat, the beans in between the corn rows, and that was done in a farm shop with spare parts they found from all over the country, and they could do that. And I think that the equipment can be designed to harvest this if we can develop this system and get it accepted. The new paradigm enables a mature chloroplast to capture more CO2 and produce more photosynthate. In other words, the source will produce more. Then the hybrids that have the highest capacity reproductive sinks will use that source. We'll make use of it, but it will not. But it'll leave enough, but there'll be the source produce enough photosynthates to enable the vegetative sinks to access more photosynthates, so the root system and the base of the stalk is not cannibalized by the grain part of the plant. And then the cultivar and variety selection is site-specific. Production inputs become variety-specific, and we think increased productivity can be achieved by this system. We just have to work out how to get it done. And I'm sorry, you shut me off any time. I've been working on this for a long time. Most, you know, I'm getting pretty old, but I've been working on this for a long time. Since in June 6, 1966, when I went to Johnny Pendleton's plot at the University of Illinois and saw him put reflectors out in the field, reflecting light back into the corn plant and increasing yields. Then I watched my old professor, Ellis Graham, put lights down in the field and increase yield with lights down in the ground and in the field. And then everyone says, well, of course, anyone knows you can produce more yield with light, extra light. Well, okay, let's use it. So I can go on as long as you want, but that's, I appreciate the opportunity. I'd like to answer any questions you have.
Stay up here.
And if they're simple, I can answer them.
Well, thank you. And Bruno, if you want to come back up here, we'll open up for questions for both speakers. Anything online? Any questions from the audience for either speaker? Nothing? Oh, whoever is in the back, stand up and...
You want to go first? It was the last question to me then. It was to me, I guess, on...
Okay, you need to come back here because people online need to hear. You need to summarize the question.
Well, the question was, after all the years of doing work on row width and hybrids, how can this be correct? Is that what you said? I mean... Okay. Yeah. We do have confounding factors in the field. I've always thought that the more uniformly you could get the corn spaced in the field, the better job it could do of taking nutrients out of the soil and water out of the soil, you know, And the sooner you, the quicker you can get the highest LAI, leaf area index, obviously in the early part of the season, that's preferable. But I believe that hybrids are so different, if they really are developed to be different, and I believe that some hybrids have a chloroplast that will continue producing photosynthates right up to physiological maturity, even though most hybrids that have a curve like I have is at midlife, I get the curve of productivity starts going down. And I don't believe that's true with all hybrids. I think hybrids B, C, and D here, and I think about 10% of hybrids out there will do that, and they've never had an opportunity to produce in the environments we put them in. You talk about hybrids that tolerate stress. Well, this is putting plants close together is a man-made stress. But we need to do that to get extra yield. But I've found these hybrids that will, in fact, yield, and I think you can find them anywhere. I had off-site locations where I went to 44 degrees north latitude to 36 degrees north latitude, and I think we didn't do it just a preliminary basis, but did look like we can find the hybrids in about any case, in any location where this will work if we can select the hybrids. This year, Mississippi State University had a study that's further south they've ever been, and I'm not sure that is going to work at that far south. But anyway, I'm sorry that took so long to answer that.
Well, in relation to confounding factors that I'm assuming you imply, if I get an image, how can I distinguish, different factors? And that's one of the reasons there are so many vegetation indices, is just because of that. The ratio between the different spectral bands help you identify whether the plant was affected by a disease or if it's chlorosis because of different chlorophyll contents. Some of the symptom may be, masking one of the others, but that's where you go in depth in the analysis of the indices. And again, the UAV advantage the most, it's not just through the vegetation indices helps you to get information on the status, both nutritional or water, but our particular interest is that since the UAV is just a piece of, tool that delivers information, we still envision the connection with a crop modeling application. And so to us, the best advantage of having a UAV is that it's able to fly over a field in the crucial phenological stages and learn about possibly, skips in the plants, like, plant population. That is one of the input that the Salus model that we work with requires to run. And most of other models are not able to capture that spatial variability in relation to plant population. So anything that brings the images to a level that was not available in the past, this is a major plus in the application of UAVs.
Any other questions for our speakers? If you can stand up and talk loud, that would be great.
The question was, if you look at individual plants, it's hard to detect the differences, but there are differences depending on the different treatments, especially in relation to nitrogen. As I mentioned, again, depending on the index that you use, I mean, I don't know how many you have looked at it, but there are over 200 index, depending on the narrow the bandwidth that you use, you can learn a lot more. So my personal experience was that some of the indices respond within the nitrogen indices, respond significantly better than others. But the plants, if they suffer water stress, I mean nitrogen stresses, obviously they show with a different coloration in the leaf, you know, greenness. And, but it's also what I meant before by dilution effects. That depends on the biomass that they have accumulated. So some of the indices may give you the same answer, but once you multiply by the biomass, the nitrogen that has been taken up is significantly different. So when you go on a larger scale application, one image just like may not be necessarily sufficient. You would have to learn about either through an index that infers about biomass or through, again, a comparison of different nitrogen-based index to learn about how you can separate those fine differences.
Any other questions?
I only have 15 minutes, but the reason I don't have wheat yield data. We haven't had the problem. I've harvested all my wheat by hand, harvested everything by hand because I didn't have the equipment. But all I know is that the wheat yield that we harvested by hand, no statistical analysis, anything on it, was about the same and as a matter of fact, it's a little bit more, according to our measurements, than the control wheat, where it had wheat rows ever. I mean, I think the wheat that we used did get some benefit of the extra light on the flag leaves or whatever. I'm a corn production agronomist. I don't know much about wheat, but it looked to me like the flag leaves, the leaves of wheat, all during its reproductive stage, right up until it started drying, it did have extra light, and I think it responded to that. But we don't have measured yield data of the only yield measurements we've taken up to see if any of these crops had any effect on corn yield. Now, when we had four rows of 7.5-inch rows of wheat, we think we did in a drought year we did affect the corn yield adversely. You know, so but that's the only thing we've been doing is measuring if it affected the corn yield. That's why I went to only 3 rows of wheat, and I found out 3 rows of wheat work perfectly in the twin-row corn system to keep your rows the same place. But now the GPS, we don't need that. But I don't know. I wish now the last slide I would have had was that we wish you would run the protocol we used and run out the data on the wheat because there's a lot of work needs to be done on this. But we do have the basic data that says some corn hybrids will utilize the system. I'd love to do the work on the wheat varieties, you know, and we found the corn populations are different in this system than what our normal population would be. Only our treatments were always the same population to control in the treatment. But I wish I had the answer for that. I'm sorry, I don't have it. But someone here can maybe do that work and